Judy.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for asking.
Good.
Are we the only two yet, or is there any more?
There's no one else on yet.
Okay.
We'll start in a minute.
Alrighty.
Actually, why don't we start? They usually will join us during the Anabakoa.
All right.
Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa. The sequence Yud Kaf Shin we can utilize and do utilize to take any part of our body that needs healing and take it back to its stem cell state where it can be healed, where it can be rejuvenated, where it can be restored. And after it has been healed, we return it to our body where it will start to work in its pristine state, having been completely healed. The letters of the month of Av, the Kaf, that created the planet we call the Sun, and the Tet that created the constellation Aryeh, the lion, Leo. Hasin Kadosh, Israel, below your God, below your suitable. Leonoto ka asher barishona. And I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and will plant them, that they may dwell in the place of their own, and be moved no more, neither shall the children of wickedness afflict them any more, as at the first. And the eighth verse, we say in a whisper. We're reading from the Zohar, from the Parashah of Vayetchanan, section 13. Shema, and blessed be the name of the glory of his kingdom forever and ever. Verse 81. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei adeinu kununei aleinu maasei adeinu kununeihu. Kila ala de kolorai ak gru bedai de ha oreka ki tora shebiktav vihi Tora Shebe Alpe Tora Shebe Bekitiv Shebe Ketiv Dahu Diktiv Hashem Tora Shebe Alpe Diktiv Ha Elohim Ukim Dioraita Ihi Raza Dishma Kedisha Ikre Haki. The generality of the whole Torah, namely the written Torah and the oral Torah together, is surely that way. For the Torah is the written Torah and is the oral Torah. The written Torah is as written, Hashem, namely Zeranpin. The oral Torah is as written, the Elohim, which is Malchut. Since the Torah is the secret of the Holy Name, it is therefore called thus. The one is called Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, and the other, the Elohim. Since we're reading this verse in the middle of the section, it's a little unclear. As we know, God has many different names. Each name represents an attribute. Each name relates to a location, a makom, a place. Each name relates to a dimension. Each name has many different significant aspects. This particular verse is talking about the written Torah and the oral Torah. The written Torah is the scroll that we call the Torah scroll. But the word Torah has many different meanings as well. So when we say Torah, are we talking about the five books of Moses? Are we talking about all of the Tanakh? Are we talking about the commentaries that are written about different verses or different aspects of Torah? Are we talking about the halakha? Are we talking about musar? Are we talking about any or all of the 10 levels of Torah? This verse is explaining to us that in this particular case, the Zohar is referring to the Torah as the written and oral Torah being united and having two different names of God representing their attributes, one being the Tetragrammaton, and which is there on pin, and one being Elohim, which is Malchut, one being Mercy, which is the Tetragrammaton, and one being Judgment, which is Elohim. Are there any questions? Tonight's class is our 21st class on reincarnation, on advanced reincarnation, I should say. And it's located on the YHWH website under the Revealed Wisdom section. If you scroll down a few inches, you'll see a matrix in green and white. And the 11th row of that matrix, the second column from the left, says Advanced Reincarnation Classes. If you click on that, it will open up a page which you can then scroll down to class number 21 and click on the handout. We are starting in a chapter 7, section 1 of the Share Gilgulim, the Gates of Reincarnation, actually the Gates of Wheels. And the title of section 1 is Three Types of Souls. The first type, the Ra will explain in this section that there are three different types of soul. And I find it really interesting how people refer to the using the word Rav. Who are we talking about? Who is the Rav? Rabbi Ashla, the Ari is the Rav, ultimately the Rav that is usually referred to. He wrote he didn't write anything. His student, Rabbi Chaim Vital, wrote the Share Gilgulim from his teachings. So when he says the Rav here, is he talking about Rabbi Ari, or is he talking about Rabbi Chaim Vital? And this is true when people speak about other modern Kabbalists. Most people choose a rabbi. And when they choose a rabbi, they start to call that rabbi Rav. But the true meaning of the word Rav is large. A rabbi is a teacher. A Rav has the meaning, has the connotation of a spiritual guide. What is a spiritual guide? It used to be, in earlier generations, someone who would go into the courts in the upper worlds. They're not courts like our courts, but we refer to them as courts. They would go up and into the courts in the upper world and defend you and argue with the prosecutor, which is the Satan. They would go into the upper worlds and try and sweeten any judgment that was coming down against you to make your process more effective, to sweeten the process and make it just as effective as harsh judgment, which is what the Satan would be recommending. These words in Hebrew are so unusual when they're coming from a Kabbalist, because a Kabbalist uses words exactly. And I just find this very interesting and felt that tonight I needed to express it. I'm continuing to read. We have already explained that there are some souls that were not part of Adam's soul when it was first created. These are truly completely new souls, whereas the souls that were already included in Adam are called old souls by comparison, of which there are two types of old souls. This is a continuation of the last chapter. The new souls are those that are being born anew from the unification of face to face. Since they are new, they were never included in the soul of Adam. The old souls that were included in the soul body of Adam were born from the unification of back to back. But of these, the Rav is now adding that there are two types. Thus, there are a total of three types. The first being those which were not included in Adam, and which are considered to be completely new souls. The second type of soul is a result of Adam's sin, after which his limbs fell off, and he was reduced until he was no higher than 100 cubits. This is the secret of the verse, "And you laid your hand upon me," a verse in Psalms. Just as it happened to his body, so did it also happen to his soul. This is in the Talmud Chagiga. As a result of Adam's sin, God laid his hand upon him and diminished his stature. Before the sin, he spanned five spiritual worlds, whereas after the sin, he only spanned one. Prior to Adam's sin, he was said to have been 500 cubits high. If taken literally, then he would have been between 750 to 1,000 feet high. In Kabbalah, it means that before the sin, he spanned five spiritual worlds, whereas after the sin, he only spanned one. We have already seen that the sparks that constituted the spiritual body of Adam fell into the klipot. This is what it means that his limbs fell off, and corresponds to the diminishment of his physical stature as a result of the sin. However, some of the sparks remained part of him, meaning included within him. The sparks of his soul that remained within him after the sin were necessary for Adam himself. After the sin, he fathered Cain and Abel. And as the sages in the Perkei de Rabbi Eliezer and the Zohar say, it was from these sparks that they came. These constitute the second type of soul. In other words, some sparks did not fall, but remained within Adam for the sake of his own existence. And most of these were transmitted to his children, Cain and Abel. These constitute the second level of souls that will be discussed in this chapter. The third level is those sparks of his soul that left him at the time of the sin and which return to the depths of the klipot. Note that the Rav writes explicitly that they returned to the depths of the klipot. The sages alluded to them by calling them limbs that fell off. It was from this third level that the soul of Seth, the third son of Adam, was taken. My commentary. I found this section confusing when I first read it. Here is my understanding from other readings and questions I have asked my teachers. When the vessels broke, as taught by the Arizal, the sparks of light fell into different levels of the klipot. Some of these sparks became the souls of inanimate objects in the physical world. Some became the souls of plants in the physical world, while some became the souls of animals in the physical world. And the higher souls became souls of human beings in the physical world. How it was determined which became what was not truly made clear, other than the greater the desire to receive, the deeper into the klipot they fell. And ultimately, this is the level of animals in our world today. Thus, when Adam fell, the animals and the plants and the inanimate levels also fell. Adam and Chava existed with a body and soul sparks in a spiritual level prior to existing in the physical world. This spiritual level is called the Garden of Eden. This spiritual level was also populated by the race of angels called Watchers, or Tali, or Dragons. The entities called Satan and LL, control of some of these Watcher angels, and enticed Eve and Adam to miraculously, or actually, eat from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. Thus, they were expelled from the Garden of Eden and were reduced in size both spiritually and physically. This expelling from the garden is the idea of becoming physical. At the level of the Garden of Eden, they were able to move between all five worlds, while after being expelled, they were limited to the seven levels of earth, the seven levels of hell, and all of these exist physically in various dimensions. Now, all potential souls and soul sparks existed in Adam and Chava in the Garden of Eden. This terminology of losing their limbs is describing the idea that they lived in the physical world, striving to do teshuvah. Yet due to the influence of the Satan and LL, they continued to fall. Some of the souls that were originally part of the left and right arms of Adam and Chava actually left Adam and Chava and reincarnated as Cain and Abel. When they did the murder sin, more sparks left all three of them. Thus, the three are considered the root souls of humanity. And as we read on, either tonight or further on, we're going to get some further clarification of this particular paragraph. Now, what the Arizal is explaining in this section is there are three levels of souls that have to do with the two sins. One set of sparks participated in both sins. One set of sparks only participated in the sin of Adam and Chava. And a third set of souls left Adam and Chava to grow through Dormita and Nesia at the time of the sin. This third group is called the new souls. There are other new souls that come from the other two levels as well. As once a soul goes through this Dormita and Nesia, they are considered cleansed of something and called new. That something may be any one of the three aspects of the three levels of sin. I hope this clarifies things a bit. The word new and the different names that we call the souls are referring to different levels, even within one of these names, and that leads to confusion. Are there any questions before we continue to read in the next section?
Could you explain what the word watchers mean?
In the book of Daniel, I don't remember the chapter and verse number. It refers to the Hebrew word Irim, I believe it is Irim, which translates directly meaning watchers, meaning something or some entity that sees out, that watches. there's a movie that just came on cable that was in the movies about 6 months ago, called The Adjustment Bureau. And it is describing, in that movie, two people who want to see each other from a distance and fall in love from the distance. And they want to be together. And these men keep keeping them apart. Whenever they try to get together, these men travel faster than other people can travel. And they move indoors and underground in all different ways. And they stop these two men and women from getting together. And eventually the man gets frustrated and starts to question what's going on here. And what is explained by these people is that there's a director. They don't use the word God or creator, but they call him the director in the movie. And the director has a plan. And their job, they can't see the whole plan, but only parts of the plan. But their job is the parts of the plan that they are given. They must see that people don't change the plan. They don't go outside of the plan. And that's their job.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same idea as the Watchers, or the Tali, which is the word that is used in the Sefer Yetzirah in chapter 6. There is a plan of creation. What is that plan of creation? How do we have free will, and then somebody chooses something that's not part of free will? Of course, that doesn't really seem to happen or can happen. But it's also the Watchers who interfere in human affairs. All of those, what do I want to call them? I forget the word. Conspiracy theories. Discussions that are really, you know, out there in avant-garde and all of those other terms. The conspiracy theories, are they real or are they not real? What's the source of the conspiracy theories? You know, you talk to people who follow them, and, you know, they're certain that the world is controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Who controls them? Well, the Watchers control it. The Watchers have a job to make sure that the plan of creation is implemented. So sometimes they will interfere in an individual's life, and sometimes they will interfere in the whole idea of the quantum consciousness of humanity. Sometimes they will stay totally out of it. The Watchers is a race of angels that have the physical appearance of dragons. The Watchers are a race of angels that have leathery skin but a humanoid figure. The Watchers are real and not real, because they live in the level of Malchut, the physical level, but in the upper, in the higher levels of the physical level, in the Keter of Malchut. The Watchers have a job to make sure when we had the atom bomb and we're potentially going to blow up the world, they made sure that couldn't happen. That didn't happen. Every step in the plan gets implemented. The Watchers watch and guide us. The Watchers are not human. They're angels, but they're a race of angels that have a totally different agenda. They're not beneficial to man. They're not harmful to man. They have a job to do. Have I said too much and confused you too completely?
No. The part when you said they had a leathery skin, and did you say human figure?
Humanoid. They have arms and legs.
Okay, but then you also
have two eyes.
Yeah, you said also they have the appearance of a dragon also, right?
They're referred to as the dragons because of their leathery skin.
Oh.
They don't look
like
dragons.
Oh, okay. They're more
they,
human.
When people dream or when people go through meditations and they travel in different dimensions, they will meet watchers. And the watchers will appear to those people the way those people want them to appear. So sometimes you'll meet a light being in a dream, and it's a watcher, because that's what you want to see, and that's how the watcher allows himself to be seen. But if you choose to see the truth, then you'll see the way they truly appear. And it's very frightening, only because of the historical pattern that the Satan used one of the watchers to entice Eve. And so that racial memory continues in every human being. Any other questions?
No, I have a friend who told me that she saw the death angel in a dream. She has dementia, and I wonder if it was really a watcher she saw.
Obviously, we can't know because we're not there, and that's the real power of the tools, because you see what you see. You're able to see the truth by using the tools, even in your dreams. The woman has dementia, so is she being accurate in her descriptions? She saw what she wanted to see, just like all of us normally see what we want to see.
Were the watchers erased to people? Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
Well, I would say, why does it take two witnesses to prove somebody guilty of murder? If one person sees somebody murder another human being, only one person sees it, and the man confesses, under Torah law, he cannot be convicted of murder. People see what they want to see. Courts are not about are not about truth. Courts are about protecting the society from itself. From the nature of human beings. Let me even go further and say the animalistic nature of human beings. But this is just my opinion. It doesn't mean that it's truthful. Doesn't mean it's truth for you. This is what you have to decide for yourself by doing your own study.
She's not into Kabbalah, and she did ask me if that was Angel Gabriel, and I just said I didn't know. I said, were you frightened? And she said no. So that was the end of the conversation. I didn't know enough to go any deeper.
Yeah, I'm sure at the time you didn't know. You didn't have the background to understand. And even so, the answer is you don't know because you weren't there.
You don't. Mm-hmm.
Typically, what we meet in those kinds of situations are our higher self. When you have a dream that's frightening to you and you're running from some entity, turn around and ask him what he wants. Because he's your higher self and he wants to talk to you and tell you to do something. And you don't want to do it, so you keep running. You run away from the message. That's typically what happens. Shall I continue, or are there more questions? Because this is good.
I'm enjoying this.
One other question. I don't know if I have them mixed up, but is this the group of angels that were once people on the earth?
No.
No, no. Okay.
This was a race of entities that was created prior to the people on the earth.
Okay.
There are 10 races of angels, and they were created prior to man. In the context of, as we come down from the Ein Sof to the physical creation, the angels were the tools of the Creator, and they were the hands of the Creator. But angels are only able to go in one world at a time. You know, they're not able to move between worlds, except in special circumstances. The watchers get a message from the higher angels, like Gabriel or Michael. They'll tell the watchers what to do. And then the watchers, who are able to come into the physical area because they're the angels of Malchut, then they will implement what Michael and Gabriel tell them what to do. Michael and Gabriel don't come into this world. So if somebody thinks they're seeing Michael and Gabriel, you know, that's their higher self. Or it's a watcher. It's good that these entities are going to appear to people the way people want to see them.
Do we carry on a conversation if we meet one in our meditation?
I've heard people say they do.
If Gabriel and Michael don't come into this world, when we do the bedtime prayer and we say Gabriel's on one side, Michael's on the other side, how does that relate to me? Why are we saying that they don't come into this world?
Because human beings are comfortable with taking energies and taking consciousness or metaphors and making human aspects of them. So when we say Michael, we're talking about the energy of Chesed. When we say Gabriel, mm-hmm. we're talking about the energy of Gevurah. When we say Uriel, we're talking about Tiferet. When we say Raphael, we're talking about... I have to think of that. Through which one we're talking about, but
well, he's the healing one. So,
the healing one's probably Yesod. But I'd have to think it through, and I'm a little mm-hmm. tired today to do so.
Yeah. Thank you. That really cleared
you
it
said
up.
Said Michael was Chesed.
Chesed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, just go by the directions. What do you say? Michael's on the right.
Gabriel's on the left.
Mm-hmm. From the left, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uriel's in front.
Uriel in front. Yeah.
Raphael in back. Okay, so Raphael is in back means Malchut. So that's the answer to who Raphael is. And Uriel is in front is
Tiferet.
Definitely Tiferet.
Yeah.
But this is human beings like this humanization. So that you take the concepts, they became angels. And yes, there is an angel. There is an angel Michael, except it's a race of beings who live in the dimensions connected to Chesed. And those race of beings are the hands and tools of Hashem, just like humanity is the hands and tool of Hashem. The difference is humanity is meant to be able to move through all four worlds, all five worlds, whereas the angels are only meant to go in one world. But as this soul section we just read, because of the sin, because of the fall, we're living in this one section and even less than one section. You know, we aren't even conscious of going through all of the dimensions of Malchut. We just know this one world called Earth, and we don't even know all of that because we don't go into the oceans. We don't go into the inner Earth. Well, some do. Any other questions?
I have a question. Who is LL?
LL is the female aspect of Satan. Her name is spelled L-I-L. I-T-H. And as a man, I am told not to say her name at night.
Okay.
Because whenever you say the name of an angel, you call them. Just like whenever you say the name of Hashem, you're calling that energy. Her particular technique, her particular a mitzvah or do not do mitzvah is the idea of wasting seed. So whenever a man wastes seed, she receives the energy. If a man mentions her name, she is typically going to come visit him in his dream that night, and he possibly could have that event. So we are taught to protect ourselves not to mention her name. So we refer to her as LL.
Oh, awesome.
Any other questions? Chapter to section 2 of chapter 7 called New Souls. The first level is considered to be a completely new soul. It is about such a soul that has descended into this world, born into a body that the sages alluded to when they said, come and see, when a person is born, they give him a nefesh, etc. And if he merits more, etc. This is the statement appearing at the beginning of Saba of Mishpatim in the Zohar Mishpatim. The Rav has quoted it several times, and we have already learned about it in Chapter 1, Section 2. Since it is a first lifetime, he can achieve everything. It appeared to be a statement that applies to all first incarnations, But now it apparently applies only to the first incarnations of completely new souls, those that were not originally part of Adam's soul before the sin. My commentary. The comment above will be confusing to you in that it refers to some aspects understood differently than my discussion above in section 1. Let us say that a nephesh that incarnates as initially having gone through Dormita and Nisya is called a new soul, even if it has had previous incarnations prior to the Dormita process. In other words, the soul split into male and female as they come into the physical world. If this is the second time that they are splitting in this process, they are not called a new soul. If it is the first time in this form of splitting into male and female, they are called a new soul and can achieve a full and complete tikkun in this incarnation, potentially. Since it is a first lifetime, he is able to achieve the nefesh of Asiyah until the neshama of the neshama of Atzilut, level after level, as it says, if he merits more, etc. The neshama of the neshama is another nomenclature for the fourth general level of Chaya. Since it is a first lifetime, he can achieve everything. And this he can do without much effort. We have already explained this first level before. However, if during that time he sins and causes a blemish and dies, necessitating a return to this world, then he is called an old Bilgul. My commentary. His cosmic soulmate will be born near him. In earliest generations, they were twin sisters. In later generations that we would still call earlier, the 12 sons of Jacob's generation as an example, and prior to that, they would be born into the same family. This is where the Midrash says that the sons of Jacob married their soulmates that were twin sisters of their brothers. It is also the idea of arranged marriages that are still prevalent in some of the societies and parts of societies today. The arranged marriage of cousins is one of these traditions that allow for the easy meeting of soulmates, which is what is called without much effort above. Before going on to discuss the next level, the Rav comes back to the subject of new souls to make one more point, which is also taught previously in the beginning of chapter 1. As we have already explained beforehand, the nefesh comes to him at birth, but the ruach cannot come to him until he is 13 years old and one day. The neshama cannot come until he is 20 years or more. In this way, he advances and gains according to his deeds until he achieves the nefesh, ruach, and neshama of Atzilut according to the level of his years. In effect, there are two requirements conditioning the advance of soul from level to level. One is age, and the second is the merit of his deeds. My commentary. Age represents mercy or chesed, the opportunity to correct any mistakes through teshuvah. The merit of the deeds is givurah. These two sefirot are always connected, just not as strongly as Chachma and Bina, which are always in zivug, in intercourse, sexual intercourse in unity. Chesed and Givurah are usually connected, especially in a new soul. I bring you this information to start teaching you to think like a student of Kabbalah. Why would you just accept the statement that starts in effect? You need to begin to question, not just accept, as you are taught to do in your classes and normal Western society classes and schools, and by your previous teachers. That may not be clear, so let me make it clear. Why am I speaking to you about Chesed and Gevurah as it applies to this idea of living a certain number of years or earning, having certain level of merits of your deeds, as was discussed in this section too of chapter 7. Most times, and I'm guilty of this as well, you read these statements from the sages and you accept them, you don't question them. But you need to question them, you need to change the way you think. And so I brought forth this information. What is time? Time is mercy. I taught you that in earlier classes, in the basic class. Time is mercy. So how does time being mercy impact the concept that a child must be 13 years of age before it can have a ruach? Why can't a child get a ruach earlier? This is part of the thinking that I want you to start to think outside the box. We have a little bit more time, but the next section, 3, is called Sparks Retained, is a little too long to finish in the time we have left. So perhaps since we were doing so well with questions, you'd like to continue that conversation. I will also make... Go ahead.
And the watches related with the Anunnaki?
With the whom? I didn't hear the last word.
Anunnaki? Anunnaki?
Please spell it. I'm not understanding the pronunciation you're using.
I don't know how to spell it. But it sounds like
Laura,
I-K-I-N, Anunnaki. It's like a giant people.
Anoki.
Anoki?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No. Anoki is a Hebrew word that means I. It gets translated as the word I, like I am, except that there's another Hebrew word for I, and that's Ani. Ani is spelled Aleph Nun Yud. Ani can be permutated to be Ein Aleph Yud Nun. Ain means nothing. Ani, I, is really nothing. What makes you you? The fact that you have an ego that separates you from everybody else. Is that real? No, it's nothing. Because in the endless world, there was only one vessel. So there's no such thing as 7 billion human beings. There's no such thing as 7-10 races of angels. Ain and Ani, the same letters in a different order. But Anohi is spelled Aleph, Nun, Kaf, Yud. It should be spelled Aleph, Nun, Vav, Kaf, Yud. But nowhere in the Tanakh is it ever spelled with that Vav. It's never complete. And that's significant. It teaches us. But when we look at the Tanakh and we see the word Anochi, it only is used when it's applying to Hashem. Hashem says the first word in the Esther Dibrot, Anochi, I am God. Anochi Hashem, I am God who took you out of Egypt, etc. Anohi is God, is the word for I as it applies to God. That's a real word. God is real. There is God, there is fulfillment, and there is reception, there is vessel. But there's not 7 billion receiving vessels. That's the illusion. That's the nothingness. But here we come and we say, Moshe and Hashem use the word Anohi in the Tanakh. Well, Moshe, we are taught by the sages, is a soul that is encompassing the equivalent of, these are different terms that are used to try and describe, the essence of Moshe includes all Jewish souls, all 600,000 Jewish souls. So he represents the vessel. I shouldn't say Jewish souls, I should say spiritual souls. But Moshe represents the vessel. Hashem represents the fulfillment. The word Anohi, meaning I, can apply to those two entities. Not that I am implying that God is an entity. It's so much more than that. I don't want to limit him by that. But to get across the point I'm trying to get across, I have no other way of doing it in the English language, probably in the Hebrew language as well. Anochi represents the vessel and the fulfillment of the vessel in the endless world. The Tali is a race of entities. Just like human beings are a race of entities. All of these races of entities are illusionary. What's the definition of an illusion? Most people would say anything that's not truthful is an illusion. But that's not the definition of an illusion. Definition of an illusion is anything that changes. Because the fulfillment, the creator, doesn't change. The vessel can change, but that change is illusionary. Ultimately, there's the endless world and nothing else. Actually, there's the endless world, and there is the extension of the Creator, which is the light, which is Hashem. And then there is the Creator that we can't know anything about. And everything else is illusionary. But illusions can be very real to us. And that's something we always need to remember. Are there any other questions, or have I totally confused everybody? Announcements. This coming Thursday at 10 p.m. is a class in Zohar. Saturday night, the first opportunity to do a spiritual action in the new week. The new week that includes the new month. 10 p.m. Saturday evening. 10:30 a.m., the second of our preparation classes for the holidays of Tishrei. Monday morning, 5 a.m., the class for the Sefer Yetzirah. 5:30 p.m., we will have a class in, basic class, in Tzedakah and Tithing. This is something that is thought to be useful, not just thought to be useful, is useful as part of your process of teshuvah, as part of a method of preparing for the Tishrei holidays. It's always good to review this basic class in this subject, especially during the month of Elul. 8:30, we will have our third class in the Esser Sefirot by Rabbi Ashlag. Tuesday, next Tuesday at 8:30 will be our connection to the new month of Elul. We will not be doing reincarnation next week. We'll be having our Rosh Chodesh connection for the month of Elul. And it's early enough that people can join us. Any other questions before I wish you a beautiful week? Shalom, you all.
Thank you.
Shalom. Thank you. Thank you for a good lesson.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.